Well, it's great to be in Kokomo, Indiana. You know what? I am nobody special, but what I do know is that the Lord credentials the ones that He calls. And He does that in a variety of ways, because I'm just a little boy that grew up in Madison County. I went to Anderson Highland. I have no idea now why I have the opportunity to travel around the NFL and work with special men like Hunter Smith and speak about what it means to be a better father, to be more committed family man, to get your priorities right. But that's what I do. And I work for an organization called All Pro Dad that was founded 17 years ago by a guy that you might recognize his name, Tony Dungy. Any Tony Dungy fans in the house? Right? I think quite possibly, right, he is the man with the moral authority able to speak truth into the lives of so many people, because he's a bridge builder and he reaches out, right? It's not about giving men a hand out, it's about giving them a hand up. And that's what Tony does, and that's what places like YMCA's do all over America. So round of applause for YMCA and their great work. Right? This is where committed men come together and get things done. And I know that the mayor, is the mayor in the room today, by the way? I know that mayors and other political officials think that that's where things really get done. But I am convinced from my travels that it's places like this where men gather and join in a common purpose and a higher calling to the one that we're serving, to glorify His name. It's not about us, but it's about the kids in the community, and it's about making a difference and finding a way to make sure that we're unified. And what I know is that places like this is where men become unified, and women too, but in this case, it's a gathering of strong, committed men. So can I pray on top of the prayers that have been happening all day? Can I do that? Lord, we're coming here today humbly, not because we have anything special to say, but because we love You. And we are called according to Your purposes, and we know, Lord, that the men that are called according to Your purposes will ultimately have a chance to change their families. But change our hearts today, Lord. Help us to be the men that You have called us to be, and help us to be attuned to the message that Hunter has for us today. Thank You for all You're doing in our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. So can I tell you about the Jersey effect and about how that came to pass? You probably haven't even heard about it, but it's actually done quite well. It's a little book that I dreamt up, and I had an idea, and I talked to Tony about it, and he said, you need to go talk to a guy named Hunter Smith. And we sat at a little restaurant in Zionsville, Indiana. I shared an idea with him that I had to go back and retell the story about what happened on a day that I bet 100% of the people in this room participated in. Now, there may not have been anybody in February of 07 at the game other than this guy, but I imagine that most of you had your TV sets turned by show of hands to the Colts versus the Bears. Anybody? Right, we all did, right? It's part of our common story. It's a part of what binds us together as community leaders and men. It's a chance to come together and celebrate. And we won a big game, but you know what? I'm convinced that the championship game didn't happen in Miami. It happened 2 weeks before that against a team, I think they were called the New England Patriots, right? That little team from Boston. But that championship game, right, was amazing. You guys watched that. I bet a few of you were there, probably. Anybody there? Right, amazing game. Jeff Saturday, right, the stories. Hunter kicking the ball. It was an amazing day. But we came together and we learned something about ourselves, I think, by going out and finding a chance to have a higher calling as a group of men, not just the men on the field, but all the men that came alongside them and the women, too, that got to share in that amazing victory. And then they went on, and Tony got a chance to beat one of his dear friends, Lovie Smith, who is now the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which is just so funny and so ironic that that's where Tony was and got fired. And you guys have probably read Quiet Strength and know his story well. But at the end of the day, what I knew happened inside the locker rooms, inside the training rooms, on the football field, was different than what I had seen in my work with other NFL teams. I've worked personally with 17 of the 32 NFL teams. I've worked with hundreds of athletes, coaches, and alumni around the league, helping to advance this message of what it means to be a better father. And what I found was, when you get men talking about their kids, about young people that they love, about what it means to be a family man, then you can open up their heart around being a better father, and I can ultimately then point them to the ultimate father, right? Round of applause for God, right? The ultimate father. So if you'll indulge me for just a moment, can I have you do something for me? I want you to write a love note for me. Would you do this for me? Each of you has an All-Pro Dad notepad on your table. Y'all take a pen. I brought some pencils along. But just indulge me for a moment. Turn to your table. And what I want you to do is I want you to think of either a child or a young person in your life which you have been uniquely called to make a difference in their life. And I want you to take 3 minutes. And I want you to write them a note, and I want you to tell them how important they are to you. I want you to encourage them in some ways with the written word, and then you're going to fold that up, you're going to put their name on the other side, and you're going to give that to a young person that you have been called to mentor, lead, or serve as a spiritual advisor before. It can be a kid, it can be a child, but it's somebody that you have been called to mentor or lead. Will you do that for me now? God blesses you. Keep writing. God blesses you who are poor, for the kingdom of God is given to you. God blesses you who are hungry now, for you will be satisfied. God blesses you who weep now, for the time will come when you will laugh with joy. God blesses you who are hated and excluded and mocked and cursed, because you are identified with the Son of Man. When that happens, you can rejoice. Yes, you can leap for joy, for a great reward awaits you in heaven. And remember, the ancient prophets were also treated that way by their ancestors. What sorrows await you who are rich, for you have only happiness now. What sorrows await you who are satisfied and prosperous now, for a time of awful hunger is before you. What sorrows await you who laugh carelessly, for laughing will turn to mourning and sorrow. What sorrows await you who are praised by crowds, for the ancestors also praised false prophets. Hunter and I are not here to be praised. What we've done is nothing special. What you do is special. What you're doing right now to mentor and lead, you're mentoring. Realize your pen is the sword that can ultimately cut open the heart of a young person, and you're going to tell him that it's important. You're going to give that to him. It's going to be under the pillows. There are 200 men here today that are going to go speak to a kid because we came here today. Round of applause for that. Right? There is a fatherless epidemic going on, men. There are a lot of kids that don't have biological fathers growing up and helping them. I'm sure that there are a lot of homes here that were broken and that the man didn't have, or the child didn't, y'all didn't maybe have a great dad. Now, I did, and I'm blessed, and I'm able to come and carry this message, but you don't have to have had a perfect father to go on and be a perfect mentor. And that's what Tony and Hunter and myself all stand for, is finding a way to speak truth in the lives of young people, help to raise up the next generation so that we can ultimately be spiritual fathers to the men that may not have had a biological father in their life. There's an epidemic going on, and I need your help. Can you guys help me with this? So I need you to do two things today beyond going out and speaking to the young person, putting that note under their pillow if they're your child, or handing it to them face-to-face, look them in the eye, take them to lunch, help to extend that. But there's two things that you can do. We came today because we're linked with a system, and that system's called All-Pro Dad. And we've got chapters all over America. In fact, we've got over 80 of them here in the state of Indiana. And I'm certain that there's a couple of team captains in this audience right here. You just don't know it yet. It's that regular dad that has an elementary school kid that says, hey, I'm not the coach at school. I'm not sure what my role should be, but I want to start an All-Pro Dads chapter so that we can take some Tony Dungy-infused curriculum into the school. We can do it every month, just like you do it here. But imagine dads and kids getting together, trying to find a way to get better and doing it just like you do here every single month, month after month. It's easy to do, and if there's anybody that's inspired to step up and speak out and lead that chapter here in Kokomo, I want to help you get that done. So you're going to come talk to us afterwards. Will you do that for me? I don't know who it is, but I know that person is here. The second thing, for those of you that are involved in city leadership and are involved in the schools, who's involved in school administration in some way? Anybody here? Anybody involved in the high school? Nope. Well, one of the reasons, there's maybe a couple of people. One of the things that we're doing here today is we're launching an initiative called Jersey Effect 360, where we've taken this book and we're now giving sports teams a way to raise funds and raise character at the same time, taking the values that you're going to hear Hunter talk about in less than 2 minutes, and we're taking those into school so that teams can organize around these principles: academic, athletic, social, and spiritual. When you grow in all four dimensions and you're working to get better in those dimensions, you got a stronger team and your opportunity to win on and off the field will increase. And so that's what I'm doing with this gentleman here in the back. Ryan, wave your hand. So if you know any sports teams that need to raise money in order to do the extracurricular activities that they want to accomplish, then that's the guy to talk to, and we can help you do that through the lens of Jersey Effect 360. So I'll plant that seed, and now I'm going to introduce my good friend. Tony said, meet Hunter. Hunter was a punter for 10 years. He grew up just outside Gunter, which is not far from Sherman, Texas. So Hunter the punter from Gunter, you got it? Everybody's got it, right? So he grew up in Texas, and he wouldn't tell you this about himself, but Hunter was Mr. Everything, right? He was quarterback, wide receiver. He did it all. He got a chance to get a lot of scholarship offers, but he went on to play for a little college up in northern Indiana by the name of Notre Dame. Any Notre Dame fans in the house? Right? Probably a couple of you. And he might tell a few stories. In fact, I hope you do tell a few stories about Lou, so I'm not going to steal your thunder. But he got a chance to play for Lou Holtz and then went on through a series of circumstances to play for what I believe is one of the best player coaches in the history of the NFL, Tony Dungy. He learned a lot. He built a community. He was active in the Bible studies, right? He was active in the prayer circles. He was in the community. He's done more rubber chicken fundraiser events than any man in America, because he understands that the Jersey Effect means giving up your life on behalf of others, right? Giving up your time and your jersey to make a positive impact on those around you. So I'm grateful that he took a time out of his day to come and spend and talk. I'm grateful that you all let me speak a little truth today. Know that you're part of a much larger mission, which is to be better men. And so without further ado, let me introduce my dear friend, Hunter Smith.
Thank you, Darren. I tell you what, I love going around with Darren and doing stuff like this. My wife and I were talking about you last night. We were talking about, and the thing I was blown away by was, Darren is a guy, I've seen him in all kinds of dynamics, with all kinds of people, at all kinds of events, and nobody takes a room better than Darren Gray. Nobody stands up, takes charge, and calls. You know when you're at something and there's just not a real clear leadership of what's going on in the room? I'm in a band, I do a lot of speaking, I see this kind of thing all the time. When Darren's at an event, there's always a true north. We always know where we're going and what we're doing, but I wanted to tell you this because this is what she's. I'm not. We were talking about it last night, and I said the great thing about Darren is that while he is the guy who can take charge of an event and make it happen, that's publicly, it's something like this. Personally, he's one of the most agreeable people I've ever met. He's one of the great, you know, when it's, hey man, you want to go get something to eat? It's sure. Where do you want to go? I don't care. Like, he's not, personally, he doesn't go, yes, I do want to get something to eat. We're going to Chick-fil-A. They're a corporate sponsor of Tony Dungy. We're going to, He just is such a good dude, and I really enjoy doing this with him. Part of the fun of the whole deal is just being together, driving up here on the crusty roads today. It's pretty nasty out there, and I think it's going to get nastier, so if anybody's got an extra basement, we might need a place to shack up tonight. I am from Texas, outside of Gunner, Texas, between Gunner and Sherman. And guys, I can't, Darren said this about himself, but I can't emphasize enough how normal of a person I am. It, very, very, very normal guy from a normal background. My dad, some of the things he was saying about the ability and this athletics and all of that stuff, I have nothing that wasn't given to me. First by God, and second of all, my father is one of the most talented human beings on the planet that you'll never hear of. He's just an old country man. We were raised on a cattle ranch down in Texas. And my father was one of the best athletes I ever met all of my life. He was a better athlete than me, and my brother, who was older than I was, could outrun us, outthrow us, outjump us, out everything. And it just kind of got passed down in the gene pool. So I have a lot to thank him for, both passing along a lot of athletic ability, but also passing along a lot of instruction and a lot of time with us, because that's something you can't put a dollar sign on, the time that a father spends with their son. So understand that I'm just a father of four kids. I have a wife, a mortgage, making it through life, trying to follow the Lord and do what He asked me to do. That's kind of who I am. That's why I'm here today. I want to start with a story this morning or this afternoon. First of all, if a bottle of water found its way up here, I would not be mad. So preferably one that has not been drank from, but I don't care if it has really. I have kids, so everything's nasty. There's a story in the Gospels. It's kind of a little known, not really a little known, but the correlation of the two events isn't, there's not a lot of time spent on them, where Jesus is on one side of the Jordan River, and he gets a call. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. This guy comes from the back of the crowd and he says, "Jesus, come to my house. My daughter's sick." And Jesus certainly recognizes this man. This man's name is Jairus. And Jairus is one of the leaders in a local synagogue. So he was kind of the important... Hold on, let me work on this. Let me work on this real fast here. I do apologize. This is terrible for the recording. But I'm kind of parched. So Jairus is a leader in the local synagogue. Back in those days, that equated to kind of a geopolitical rock star with a religious twist on it. And he says, "Come, my daughter is going to die." And Jesus says, "Okay, I'll be there." And Jairus runs along. And as Jesus is walking from one side of the Jordan, he's going to cross and go to the other, he is touched by a peasant woman who's sick. And he stops. The crowds have been gathering around him. And he says, "Who touched me?" And everybody says, "Man, everybody. We're all touching you." He says, no, I felt power go out from me. I felt faith activate the power that I have." And he turns around and there's a woman and she's kneeling down behind the crowd and you can tell that it's her. And he stops and he deals with this woman. He talks to her. He gives her time. A sick peasant. While on the other side of the Jordan River, the rock star of the day, one of the most influential men in the culture of the day, has a daughter that's dying. Well, about that time, as Jesus has taken his time going to heal Jairus' daughter, someone from Jairus' household comes up and says, "Don't worry about coming." the daughter is dead, and you don't need to come anymore. And Jesus says, no, the child will live. But he doesn't hurry. He stays there with the woman, with the issue of blood. It always has been strange to me. I mean, on a side note, the first application I see to the story is, how many times does it seem like Jesus is over somewhere dealing with somebody else when you have needs yourself in your home? And I get that. I see that happening in my own life on both sides of the Jordan from time to time. But then there's a deeper message in this, I feel. And I hope that today, if we don't get anything else, we get the message of this story. You see, guys, if I were Jesus, and whenever a sentence starts like that, it's going nowhere. But if I can tell you that right now. But if I were Jesus, I would have been like, okay, I get it. I get it, Father, I see what you're doing. Here I am. I'm born a peasant. I'm born in a scandalous way with these young people. I've waited my turn for my ministry. I'm 30 years old. And now, it's time. It's liberation theology time. I'm about to rise up and blow this joint. And here's how. The guy who's really in charge of the religious institution of the day has a sick daughter. And in my opportunistic spirit, what I would say is, it's time to go heal his daughter, and then it's going to be speaking gigs from then on. This guy is going to give me opportunity after opportunity to get in front of people. I might get to actually become a priest in the local synagogue with him. And then at some point, I'm going to end up running this show. And that's how God's going to do it. That's how he's going to save the Jews. It's how he's going to save mankind. This is what's going to propel me in my ministry. This is it. That's how I think. But Jesus doesn't think that way. He's not wicked like I am. He stops and gives the woman time, who's just a peasant with an issue of feminine bleeding. Unclean, unclean. And he lets the important guy's daughter die. Now the story goes on, and Jesus goes on over to Jairus' house, and he goes up and he heals the daughter. Because he's Jesus, he can do both. But he lets one thing, he lets a tragedy happen. And I learned something from this story. There's a lot in there, but if you drill down on it, it's where I've come up with something that's changed my life. It's where God has revealed to me something that's changed my life. It's where God has given me a lesson that we put in this book, The Jersey Effect, that is changing lives across the nation. It's not our doing. It's just Him. And it's the comparison of two words, importance and value. When something is important, it means that it's of use. It means that it's of consequence. Something's value has to do with the price that's been paid for it. See, these people Jesus is talking to, they were valuable to him, but they weren't important. I'm going to tell you, I know everybody when I say that kind of thing goes, whoa, people aren't important to God. Well, this might be the most provocative thing I'm going to say all day, but do hear me. I mean to say this. I'm not having a concussion moment here. We are not important to God. I'm going to say it again. People are not important to God. By the dictionary definition, importance means something is of use and of consequence. Hammers and computers and paintbrushes are of consequence. They are important. They serve a purpose. But let me make no mistake. God does not need our work. He owns the cattle on a thousand hills, so all of our fundraising efforts are cute. And they do serve a purpose here, but He doesn't need them. No man comes to Him unless He draws them. So all of our evangelism, He doesn't need it. But because we share in His nature, He allows us to take part in His work on the earth. Because we are valuable. And why are we valuable and not important? Because, and if you have children, you understand this. There's no higher price you could ever pay for something than the life of one of your children. And that's what He has paid for humanity. So the question this morning I have for a lot of you is, A, have you been living your life out of a place of importance or of value? And B, do you value people or are they just important to you? How many of y'all are associated in some way with youth sports these days? You have a kid that's playing or a grandchild or something. Then you know how much everybody's lost their mind. You know, where I live, I live in a white bread community. And we got these people, you know, they got some kid, he's a junior in high school, white, 5'6", can't jump. He's going to be the next Dominic Wilkins, though, and we're going to make sure he plays enough AAU basketball that we're going to push it through and make it happen, when the best case scenario is he might be a fourth string second baseman at Wabash or something like that. Maybe, just maybe, and you'll have to forgive me if me mentioning race or something like that offends anyone. Understand, I'm from a locker room and there is no race in a locker room. So that's my paradigm. But maybe, just maybe, this kid is called to do something else with his life than sports. But the issue I'm seeing is that it's not really about what the kid wants, it's about what the parent wants. And the parent needs some kid to succeed in sports and validate their gene pool. And it's real funny, but it's real true too. And it needs to stop. Because what you do is you lead some kid off on a rabbit trail of sports based in your own insecurity and your own wounds. And it robs them of time that they could be pursuing what God really wants them to do with their life. That's just one example of how the importance and value dichotomy is a real big deal in our culture. When I was in college, this is for you, Darren. I'm sorry, I have to do this again. When I was in college, I played for Lou Holtz for 2 years. That's true. And, you know, I hate telling Lou Holtz stories. And here, I love it and I hate it. I love it because people think they're funny. I hate it because it always, invariably, there's somebody in the crowd who, like, has a Lou Holtz shrine in their house. And I'm just the guy who steps in and ruins their life. But no man should be idolized, so to heck with it. I was a spring of my freshman year. Before I was a punter, by the way, I was a real athlete. And I was playing wide receiver for the Irish. I went there to play wide receiver and quarterback also. Played about five positions at Notre Dame. And I was running a route, and apparently I ran the wrong route. And he came up and he grabbed me by the throat. Now, you can't do that anymore, or you'll get put in jail. But he grabbed me by the throat, and he pulled me up to him, and he called me all these curse words, which is really funny because he always said he didn't say curse words. Well, he does. Okay? He would say,
I don't say any curse words except for the word ass, and that's because it's in the Bible.
And you know, we're all men here. It's like, even as an 18 or 19-year-old kid, I remember thinking, yeah, but that was in reference to an animal. Not the way you use it. So, I've completely digressed. So he grabbed me and he called me all these names, and then he told me, I want you in my office tomorrow morning before 10 a.m. with a list of 5 schools that you want me to call so you can transfer. And you know, I'm just stunned. I'm 18 years old, and I'm trying to figure this whole thing out. And he says, and then he offered this, and this made me feel a lot better. He said, it's not your fault. We want you to know that. We make recruiting mistakes every year. And it's okay, son. And so the next day, I went back to my room and I cried and I prayed and I called all my people that I know, and I got out my Texas A&M sweatshirt and thought about wearing that into his office. And invariably made the right decision, which is to walk in on my knees, cry, and beg for another chance. And he gave it to me and let me play. And I'm so glad that he did, although he didn't really have a choice, because you can't take someone's scholarship and you can't make somebody transfer, even though he tried to tell me that he could. But for Lou, I was important. If we can back up about a year, I'm on my recruiting visit. Notre Dame is beautiful. There's the Golden Dome. I'm enchanted by it. I initially went up there. I lied to them and told them I was really considering going there. In reality, I was just a 16 or 17-year-old kid who wanted to see Notre Dame. But once I got there, it wasn't so much what I would say yes to in any other school. It was, how can I say no to this? And there were meals. And they took us out, and we got to meet all kinds of friends and everything, and people that came up and liked us, and you know, all the recruits, and tell us how great it is there and everything. And then I sat in his office, and he came and he sat down across from me on the couch, and my parents were there. Said something like, a scholarship to the University of Notre Dame is worth $500,000. And I'd like to offer you one here today, son. You know, that old thing. And he's like a grandpa. And I'm saying, yeah, I'd love to come play. We're hugging and taking pictures and everything. And I'm like, wait a minute. It didn't take very long for him to be saying, I'm a recruiting mistake. I was so valued. I was so important at one point. They wanted me to come. We're watching my highlight film together. And he's pointing out all these brilliant things I'm doing. And they're coming to my high school. But then there's a disconnect somewhere. And the bottom line is, if you live your life as an important person, you treat people as though they're important, this is what happens. Importance is based on what you can do for me today. Your consequence. But there had really been no price paid for me. It was a signature. One of the best examples I have of the principle. Yesterday I went to lunch with a friend. And I'm sure some of you have had these lunches before, maybe on both sides of the table, where you sit down and you're laughing and enjoying each other and having a good time, and then he says to you, hey, I'm kind of in a rough patch with my marriage. Now, a rough patch can mean anything. I've been in a rough patch with my marriage before. Rough patch for him meant separated for 2 weeks after a string of about 10 affairs over 11 years that just had come to the light that none of us knew about. And one of the things he said, and I'm not one of these people who just gives a ton of credence to excuses, but I do believe that there are root causes of things. And one of the things he said is he's really come to terms with, based on his life and the way he was raised, that he has never known how to receive love. And as a result, has never known how to really give love. Can't really give love to his wife. Can't really receive love from God or from other people. So obviously, y'all know how this whole thing works. Some of you have been in his chair. You just fill the void with sex. And I thought about, it's just the Jersey effect. That's what we're talking about here today. He doesn't understand his value. A lot of us here don't understand our value. A lot of the people in our lives don't understand their value, and some of that is because of how we treat them. Guys, becoming the best version of who you are has nothing to do with your job. It has nothing to do with your abilities. And this is truth, okay? I want to stop for a second. I've won a Super Bowl. I've been backstage at all the concerts. I've been welcomed into the private rooms. And I really don't say any of that to impress you, because it's not impressive. It's just the truth. I think, that, and the truth about it is that it's nothing. The best version of you has nothing to do with who says nice things about you or what rooms you're accepted into or speaking opportunities you have. It all starts at this place of understanding who God is and the price He's paid for you and the value He puts on you. It all rests on that. If you build off of any other foundation, that is building on the foundation of Jesus. And if you build your life on any other foundation, it's sand. It just really is. You know, after our faith, after our families, after our friends and our relationships, I'm convinced there's one thing that we have left. I just saw someone yawn, so I need to stop. But there's one thing that we have left in our lives. And I love saying this to a group of men, because when I look out across this room, what I see are people who are influencers in your family, in your business, in your churches. Whether you like it or not, you're an influence. When I look out across a room like this, I'm certain that other than those things, our faith, our family, our relationships, what we have in life is our influence. And you're going to be an influence one way or another on somebody every day. Look at the letter in your hand. That's going to influence somebody today when you give it to them. What influences you will determine how you influence everyone else. So outside of those other faculties of our lives, let's take this influence. Let's take this Jersey effect. For us as a team, it was the effect of the Jersey on us, how we can take the Jersey, put it on, people look to you, and what kind of an influence can you be on them because of the esteem they give you based on just fabric. For you, your Jersey is going to be something else. How are you going to go use that Jersey? How are you going to be used in the lives of other people? What's your influence going to be? Ask yourself and realize the only way to have a lasting influence and to bear lasting fruit personally and in the lives of other people is if you know how valuable you are. Let's bow our heads and I'll just close. Sometimes I have people bow their heads at the end of a speech because I don't know how to end the speech. Let's pray. That's the great concluder of all meetings. But today, let's truly bow our heads and let's talk about this with the Lord. You know, He's not far off. Lord, I think about how you called Samuel. And you said, hey Samuel. And Samuel got up and he went into Eli and said, you called? Eli said, nope, didn't call you. A couple more times the same thing happens. And finally Eli says, Samuel, I think the Lord is trying to speak to you. And for some of you guys here today, I think what God really feels is that He wants you to know, I'm not trying to trick you. I'm not throwing my voice. I'm just speaking to you today. And I'm saying, son, no matter if you're 20 years old or 75 years old in this room, He's saying, son, I love you and I gave my all. I gave my best for you. And I'm not requiring anything of you. It's just who you are. You're valuable. And all your striving, whether it's career striving or religious striving, I don't need it. I just want you. Because I paid for you. God, let that revelation fall heavy on the hearts and the minds of the people in this room, on the hearts and the minds of the people who will receive the letters that these guys have written today. Just a brief word of encouragement. And God, moving forward, I know that Rome was not built in a day, and I know that these kind of revelations take a while to sink in and become practically who we are. But I pray, God, for that process to move forward in our lives, the patterns of importance, the cycles of sin would be broken and replaced with a reality of our value. Amen.